I try to view weight training and, like you said, heavy resistance training is external load that you need to be able to get into certain positions, right? Like, let's look at, use the example of someone that's having a tough time squatting and the bar is on their back, but in actuality, they're really hinging it rather than squatting it. But then you front load them with a goblet or a Zercher squat, and all of a sudden they have a perfect squat. So in the context of movement and joint range of motion, sometimes a lot of what we're doing in the physical therapy room and the weight room, when we're providing external resistance, we're tapping into basic principles of PNF to allow for the feedback that the body needs to be able to access ranges of motion.
In today's episode, we had the pleasure of chatting to Adam Loicano about a topic that seems to make a regular appearance on social media and often divides opinion amongst clinicians. That topic being foam rolling and stretching. Adam recently completed a research review for the Physio Network looking at a systematic review and meta-analysis that explored the effects of foam rolling, stretching, and other warm-up interventions on the acute flexibility and stiffness in athletes. Adam gives us a really good, rounded take on these interventions and explains brilliantly what's actually going on. Adam himself is a physical therapist and performance coach and has been working in pro basketball and soccer since 2009. He's held roles in sports science and fitness through to sports medicine and rehab. And his current role with the Phoenix Suns, Adam oversees all rehabilitation, return to play, and performance training. Adam is also the host of the Finding Small Wins podcast, a podcast that pulls back the curtain on sports to help listeners upgrade their health and performance. To learn more about these research reviews and how they make keeping up to date so much easier for you, do click on the link in the show notes to find out more. I'm James Armstrong, and this is Physio Explained. Adam, welcome to the Physio Explained podcast. It's great to have you on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's going to be a fun one. I'm happy to catch up and chat about this one.
Well, it's really good. It's an interesting topic of conversation today. I think it's one that lots of people have conversations at the bar, around the table, at work, and I think all over the place. And that's this around foam rolling and stretching, particularly around a research review that you've done for the Physio Network quite recently on a paper that came out at the beginning of this year, January 2024. To begin with, I thought we'd start with introducing to listeners foam rolling and stretching, putting a little bit of context behind what are we trying to do and what are some of the beliefs that we've had around these two concepts?
I think the number one goal with either of those, whether you're stretching or foam rolling, is to improve flexibility. And how you define flexibility is most likely, hey, how do I improve tissue extensibility? How do I improve the pliability of it? How do I move more freely with less pain? And so the idea of foam rolling and stretching is foam rolling is self-myofascial release, right? The ability to lie on this foam roller, or lie on a lacrosse ball, use your own body weight as pressure to then, quote unquote, one thought was, hey, I'm going to break up scar tissue. And that myth has been busted for a long time. The other idea is, hey, I'm providing sensory input to the body to maybe release areas of body, release the trigger points to help improve tissue quality, reduce tension in that tissue that ultimately could improve the flexibility around that joint. The idea of stretching has been around for a long, long time. And the thought is, if I take a joint, let's just say the classic hamstring stretch, if I take my straight leg as far as I can towards my head, I can improve hamstring flexibility because I'm sustaining a stretch. And those have been around for a long time. So the idea is foam rolling and stretching overall to just improve range of motion.
Excellent. Obviously, from an athletic point of view and just overall health, flexibility forms maybe one of those components. So the paper that you reviewed was looking to see whether or not foam rolling and stretching was actually that much more superior in kind of that acute flexibility when compared to other warm-up interventions. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. They were looking at, okay, hey, we know that foam rolling and stretching are two popular interventions that folks like to do for part of their warm-up. And then there's also many other things that people do for warm-ups, you know, primarily, hey, I'm going to do a dynamic warm-up. I'm going to go for a light jog, a light bike, something to just improve the body temperature, the tissue temperature, just pliability of everything as part of a warm-up intervention. So the review itself was a systematic review looking at, okay, in the short term, if I do flexibility training, if I do stretching or foam rolling in comparison to these other warm-up interventions, such as a dynamic warm-up, what are the effects? And in the short of it, what they found was there was no real significance as far as foam rolling, stretching, and other dynamic warm-up activities as it relates only to the outcome of acute flexibility.
So, I mean, we're talking about acute flexibility there. I mean, I'm throwing you sort of off-piste here a little bit, but do you think actually there might be a difference if we look at it from a more long-term flexibility point of view, or do you think actually, no, we're probably still thinking there's not much more of a difference?
That's a really good question. I think this probably comes from a perspective of how you appreciate what tissue pliability is, how you appreciate what range of motion is. You know, from my perspective, I do believe there are some long-lasting effects if you continually expose yourself to those, so to speak, stretches. I think what you're really doing is modulating neural tension at the end of the day, kind of tapping into some of the central reflexes that we have, that then over time you learn, okay, this tissue shouldn't be as tense. This tissue should be a little bit more relaxed. The other component of it too, that I love the stretching aspect that indirectly relates to flexibility, is it also provides us an awareness of where we're tight and stiff. And so sometimes you don't know you're tight and stiff until you're put in those stretching positions. So sometimes we utilize those stretching positions to teach the awareness of, hey, this is what this tissue is supposed to feel like when you're in this movement. So for example, if like, let's say a classic, you know, you're trying to deadlift and you're trying to load your hip. Sometimes people have a tough time loading their hip because they've never done it before. So if you put them in like a classic pigeon stretch or figure four stretch and you tell them, hey, like you feel this stretch in the back of your hip, to see how this, when you do it at the bottom of a deadlift, this is what I mean when I'm saying loading your hip. So as far as the long-term effects of stretching, I think it teaches sensory motor awareness. And over time, I do think there is some neuromodulation to allow for sustained range of motion.
It's interesting using that sort of terminology, that neuromodulation, which, am I right in saying you were coming away from that thought process in terms of actually changing muscular tissue? We're not actually changing the extensibility of the muscle fibers as such.
Yeah, I would lean more in like to the classic example of when you have surgery, right? When you're in a surgery and you're under anesthesia, like let's look at an ACL, for example. When you're under anesthesia, you have full range of motion before you leave that room, but you're on anesthesia. So the nervous system is at a deficit there, or for lack of a better term, it's inhibited. So why would you all of a sudden under anesthesia have full range of motion, and then you come out of anesthesia, the nervous system's awake, and now you're restricted to maybe you can only get to 10 degrees of, you know, minus 10 degrees of knee extension, or only 90 degrees of knee flexion, right? Like there's so many other things that play into role of the structural that I do believe when it comes to the stretching, if you think about that example, I do believe that we talk about the neuromodulation, you're really just trying to manage the nervous system because either it's protecting for some particular reason, as in a post-op case, or you're exposed to certain movements for a long time or certain postures that the nervous system just learns, oh, this is what I'm supposed to be. This is my resting tone. But we know we can change that with movement, with awareness, with sensory input. A lot of things can impact the movement side of things from a nervous system.
Are you struggling to keep up to date with new research? Let our research reviews do the hard work for you. Our team of experts summarize the latest and most clinically relevant research for instant application in the clinic, so you can save time and effort keeping up to date. Click the link in the show notes to try Physio Network's research reviews for free today.
A topic that interests me, and like a lot of these podcasts, I could probably ask a million questions and I'm going to hold myself back a little bit. But what are your thoughts around the idea that we can potentially have similar or greater effects to this neuromodulation with things like heavy, slow resistance training and resistance training as such, and taking ourselves through that full range of movement? How do you feel that fits in, or is it different?
No, I think it definitely fits in. Like I try to view weight training and, like you said, heavy resistance training is external load that you need to be able to get into certain positions, right? Like use the example of someone that's having a tough time squatting and the bar is on their back, but in actuality, they're really hinging it rather than squatting it. But then you front load them with a goblet or a Zercher squat and all of a sudden they have a perfect squat. So in the context of movement and joint range of motion, sometimes a lot of what we're doing in the physical therapy room and the weight room, when we're providing external resistance, we're tapping into basic principles of PNF to allow for the feedback that the body needs to be able to access ranges of motion. That example of a goblet squat is always the one that I lean into, because someone does a body weight squat, a back squat, and a goblet squat, and all three of them look different. And you probably don't have as much knee flexion in one, you have more hip flexion in the other. But for some reason, this external stimulus provided the neural input that you needed to either shift your center of mass to allow you to access greater ranges of motion. We all have the capability to do it. Now, unless there is a true structural or bony adaptation, like a true cam lesion or a pincer lesion, by all means, that's where structure makes a difference. But in most cases, that may not be the issue, and it may be the neural component of it too. So I hope that answers your question of how I would view, like, hey, resistance training certainly helps us get into ranges of motion that without that resistance, we probably wouldn't be able to get into it.
Yeah, no, it absolutely doesn't. And I think, again, you're really tapping into that interesting point in terms of what we're looking at here is an area that's far more complicated than what we're maybe trying to say here, or I'm trying to say. And that neuromodulation, what the body's trying to do and how it does it in certain positions is going to change, and how we alter that is really important, and what we can do to that nervous system to allow greater movement, which is potentially what this paper's talking about here. But what's interesting is the fact that the paper actually talks about what else might do that for us as well. So not just foam rolling and stretching. So what is this paper telling us at the end of all of this of systematic review and meta-analysis? What can clinicians take from this that's useful?
I think what's useful is that relative to trying to warm up the body in preparation for activity, nothing is superior one versus the other between foam rolling, stretching, or dynamic warm-up. They're all beneficial. They all have a place and they all have an opportunity to warm up the tissue. For example, if you think about foam rolling, you're actively moving. You're actively putting mechanical pressure on tissues that may or may not have had blood flow to them. So you're maybe at a local level improving blood flow to the tissue while also mechanically moving just to form the act of foam rolling. The act of stretching, if you think about it from a, we understand that some of the reflexes like in the GTOs or muscle spindles, when you have sustained positional holds, you relax tissues. And sometimes those relaxations of tissues allow you to access greater ranges of motion, which then allow you to move better or perform better. Like what's a classic example of, hey, your quads are tight and your hip is tight and you do a basic quad stretch and now all of a sudden you can squat better, you can run better because you had that acute effect. And relative to dynamic warm-up, the goal of any dynamic warm-up is just to increase overall tissue temperature, blood flow, and get your heart rate up in preparation for any activity. So what I think clinicians can walk away from this paper is we can move beyond the idea that you must foam roll, you must stretch, you must do dynamic warm-up, and just have an appreciation that all of them work, not one's better than the other. Maybe slightly they have a different intent behind it if you want to kind of get into the weeds on that. But overall, all three do a really good job of providing an opportunity to warm up the human body prior to activity.
Absolutely. It's a really interesting topic, isn't it? Anecdotally, from my clinical practice, I find that it's so different from person to person. So then what you're saying and what the paper's saying here is we've got that choice that we could be far more athlete-centered or patient-centered in what we advise and what we reassure patients can and can't do.
Yeah, I think so. Everyone has a preference. I mean, I don't like foam rolling my quads. It's uncomfortable. You know, I'll foam roll my glutes because it feels good, or I'll foam roll my back. But like, there's different things that everybody likes. There's different preferences, also space, environment, all these things. If you wanted to incorporate all three, you could. You can kind of create your own system of, hey, how do I incorporate stretching? Maybe I incorporate stretching at the end of a session because it helps relax the person. Maybe I add a little bit of foam rolling because it's a little bit of active while I'm doing it. And then I follow that up with a dynamic warm-up. I think there's ways where you can incorporate all three to satisfy not only maybe the clinician's beliefs and needs, but also considering what the athlete prefers too. Because at the end of the day, if the athlete, if the patient, if they don't like what they're doing, more than likely there's another solution that they'll enjoy that'll get the same result.
And like a lot of things where we've got more options, we're probably likely to increase adherence as well.
Absolutely. And that's probably the number one thing that's going to make you successful as a clinician.
Absolutely. This is a really good example of kind of thinking not one way or another. There's a place in the in between. There's a lovely, comfortable gray area, as we see with most areas, that we're okay being one way or the other. And the in-between point, that sort of sitting on the uncomfortable fence, should be more comfortable for more clinicians out there.
I hope so. I hope that this article did that. I hope the conversation helped shed some light onto that as well.
Absolutely. Adam, thank you very much for your time. And you've done the research review for us. And if you're listening and interested in the research reviews, which I'm no doubt you are after listening to this, there are hundreds of reviews out there from other world-leading experts. So just click in the link in the show notes to try the Physio Network research reviews for free. Once again, Adam, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me. It was great catching up.